With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
Yeah, we're talking about snooker once again from Wuhan to Belfast and everywhere in between. And in between is Sheffield this week, actually, where the qualifiers are happening. So, yeah, plenty going on and off the table. And I'll apologise right now. I've got a filthy cold at the minute, so if I sound all bunged up and horrible, and then I apologise.
Well, there's that. It's one of the great, well, probably everywhere, but certainly a British thing. It's going round. There's always something going round, isn't there, this time of year? And the weather has just, you know how much I love the weather, of course. We don't ever apologise for starting with that. Bit of small talk. Got a bit cold in the last couple of days. Suddenly, I feel, that if it's the same in the north here, almost overnight, wow, it's got like 10 degrees colder. And of course, that's going to affect us all. So, sorry, I hope we hope you can muddle along in this episode, Phil. But there is definitely things going around. But you know what we could have done? We could have just played last week's tape. Save us a job, Phil. We're praising Judd Trump again. The brilliant Trump is a tournament winner for the second week running. He followed up his English Open success by winning the Wuhan Open, beating Ali Carter 10-7 in the final. 25 ranking event titles for Trump now. What a career he's having. And a really brilliant achievement to win a tournament in the UK, fly straight out to China and win another tournament there 7 days later. Just on a stamina level, it's impressive enough, Phil, never mind all the fine snookery plays. So I think everyone, frankly, in this sport right now is just kind of lost in admiration for what Judd's done there.
Yeah, tremendous stuff. We had all that talk about scheduling and how hard it is for players. And Judd sort of made a mockery of all that, didn't he, by winning them both, turning up. He didn't. I mean, a couple of interviews, he sounded a bit jaded, a little bit maybe, but not really. Never looked like it on the table. Played great stuff all week. And just tremendous stuff. And he really was battling back from behind in Brentwood quite a lot. But he was winning matches a lot more comfortably in Wuhan. He seemed to really take the belief from that English Open win and really crack on with it there. And, you know, it's got to be worrying signs for everyone else on tour, because Judd has been still doing all right without the belief over the last couple of years, since that drained away a bit after his amazing peak. But if that's back, then everyone else is in a bit of trouble.
Absolutely, yeah, right. Absolutely right to say it like that. Well, very good line from our friend and colleague David Hendon, who puts this into some context, pointing out that Trump is just the third player to have won back-to-back ranking titles in successive weeks in different countries. Stephen Hendry in 1990, China and Dubai. Mark Williams in 2002, China and Thailand. And now Judd Trump here in 2023, the UK and China. So just in terms of pure distance, we can see straight away, Phil, that this is the most impressive of the lot. It has to be. And we can see it doesn't happen very often. It's basically a once in a generation thing. I think that says it all, really. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it struck me. I was talking about Mark Williams being ahead of Judd Trump in the all-time ranking event list and being ahead of Neil Robertson as well, and saying, well, perhaps you wouldn't have forecast that a few years ago. Well, Trump is suddenly level with Williams with his 25th success. I thought it's worth updating it again. The current, you know, order of merit, to borrow a line from another sport, if you like. Ronnie O'Sullivan still topped them with 39. Stephen Hendry, 36. John Higgins, 31. Steve Davis, 28. Mark Williams, 25. Judd Trump, 25. Neil Robertson, 23. Mark Selby, 22. Ding Junhui, 14. Sean Murphy, 12. It's making a difference. He's going up that list. And that's only really, you know, I think the custom maybe is to put the player that's got to 25 or the, whatever number it is first to put them above. So, you know, he's basically joint fifth there, Judd. Ever. Joint fifth ever. I mean, you know, he's just one of the very best players we've seen in the game. And as you say, he's on a roll now. And yeah, he just made absolute light of the travel, crest of a wave. But I'll tell you what, let's be clear. If someone had said to me, you know, going into the tournament, how do you fancy Judd's chances? I'd have said, he might win a few, but he won't go all the way. It's too much to ask. You know, you just have to say it's such an impressive effort.
Yeah, really, really good. Because it draws it early in the week when he would have been really vulnerable. We're tricky. You know, Ollie Lyons has been playing well, then Selt, then Hawkins, you know, one of the players of the season, Hawkins. So it wasn't like he got some gimmies at the start of the tournament or anything. I suppose what sort of, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from him at all here, but sort of fell in his favour in the quarterfinals and semis. Tom Ford really didn't turn up in that quarterfinal, played quite badly and lost 5-0. And then Wu Yizhe in his first semi-final, couldn't really compete with him. So I suppose if he'd run into someone who was A, playing well, or B, was ready to sort of grind him down a bit at those stages, then it might have been a different story. But you know, you can only beat what's in front of you. And Tom Ford and Wu Yizhe are very good players, obviously. So not taking anything away from Judd there. But yeah, he was dominating people. You know, those first five matches, he dropped four frames by getting to the semi-final, then one more in the semi-final. He was just romping through the field. So yeah, crest of a wave is right. And he'll wish there's another tournament this week, I imagine. I think he's playing in Shanghai in that exhibition that ended up being allowed, and then he'll be going to Belfast hoping to make it three on the spin, and that would be an even madder achievement, I guess, adding that tagging that onto the end in another country.
Get your tweeting hat on again, Dave Hendon. We'll find out how many people have done that. That'll be another massive thing. Yeah, and well, lots of big storylines heading into Belfast, of course. More of that later. Well, full disclosure, Phil, and you saying there, you only beat what's in front of you. One of those sporting cliches, but very true. Reminds me a bit of the England rugby team. We're having a bit of a cushy draw in this World Cup currently, but are winning the games, and you can only beat who's in front of you. And that does remind me that I was actually in Marseille enjoying a quite extraordinary weekend of drama at the quarterfinal stage of the Rugby World Cup. I'm not just saying that to show off. I'm saying it because, to be clear, you will have seen more of the climax of the tournament than me. But let's go through the final and say it was 10-7 to Trump. And when he came out, the blocked fast, didn't he, Judd? Went 4-1 ahead. But then Carter, really impressive four frames in a row to lead 5-4 after the first session. Clearly anyone's match at that stage. Breaks of 1-1-6, 56 and 71 then from Judd in successive frames when they resumed. That was him 7-5 ahead. And he kind of kept Carter at arm's length from there, didn't he? Looked the likelier winner, clinching victory in the grand fashion with a break of 105. But obviously, you know, good battle between two battle-hardened players, frankly, and Trump just having a bit too much for his opponent in the end and you know, sitting that notable double. But Ali was certainly in there for a while and, you know, having that run and going 5-4 ahead, he might have fancied his chances, but I think maybe the key part of the match was Judd coming back out, making a real statement with those three frames. And from there, he was always in charge.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose it's a bit strange of me to mention Ford and Wu Yizhe in the quarters and semis and not mention Ali Carter in the final. You know, that is a player who's playing well, and it would grind you down and can score. You know, that was certainly no easy draw there for Judd. Ali's been in great nick for some time now. And yeah, the final started look like it was going to be quite explosive. 70-odd from Judd and then a century from Ali. And the rest of the first session got a bit sticky, really. Judd went ahead and then Ali won those four on spin. And it was set up nicely for the evening. But I guess that first session, other than those first few frames, had been a little bit grueling. But Judd really got his scoring boots on in the evening. And yeah, that was the difference, really. Other than that early century, Ali wasn't really scoring like he can. And Judd was at least enough to, as you say, keep him at sort of arm's length after that burst in the start of the evening session. And that was the difference, really. You know, it was tight. Ali's always scrapping away. I love watching Carter. He's so intriguing. Just sort of, he must be the most entertaining player to watch just sat in the chair. He's so intense. There are probably some other options there that I'm missing, but yeah, he's great to watch. But yeah, I think he said afterwards it was a scoring, and that was clearly the difference. And yeah, Judd was loving it. He said afterwards he might move to China. He wishes he played all his tournaments there. I don't think that's going to happen, but he did get a bit carried away, and he even said a bit. I don't know what it was actually. I should have checked this, but his first words of his speech were in Chinese, and that got a lovely ooh from the crowd, which was great to see. The crowd was great, busy throughout. Great sort of vocalization. I think you get this from certain different crowds in different countries, but they were really into it, and the atmosphere was great. The venue looked good. Everything I'd heard from players about the city was great. So like we said, Wuhan not had the best press in recent years, but this has been good for it in terms of everyone who's been there for the snooker saying it's been very impressive. So yeah, very good effort from Judd. Great tournament all around. Yeah, two thumbs up from me.
Sorry, on behalf of all the listeners, can we just have that reaction again from the crowd to...
It was very much a, ooh.
Oh, God. I'm not going to ask a third time. That's twice as enough, really. Phil, let's go back and reflect on some of the earlier stories in the tournament. And we'll take you through results by result from the last 16 stage. But there were obviously plenty of top lines in the opening days, but including another disappointing result for Neil Robertson. And then... quite a revelatory social media post from Neil telling us he's missing home. He's heading to Australia at the end of the year and will miss events while he's doing it. And I think the general gist from Neil is he doesn't feel he's far away. The results aren't there. By his standards, this has been a very ordinary snooker year, actually. This calendar year of 23, he's not been at the races compared to his stellar career. But listen, it's another reminder, isn't it, of the very significant extra sacrifice of players from overseas, particularly those, frankly, who hail from the other side of the world, Phil.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's he goes an awful long time without going back to his homeland and seeing family and friends. And yeah, it's just something that we sort of, you know, we get used to over here that he's doing that. But I guess we forget how hard that is. But it's big that he's saying that he's going to miss events at the end of the year. I'm not sure which ones they're going to be. I suppose he's not going to miss the UK, is he? And then after that, it's the shootout, the Scottish. He wouldn't have to do the German Masters qualifiers, I don't think. So maybe it's that. I mean, he never plays the shootout anyway. So maybe he's talking about the Scottish Open. So, yeah, I mean, he's running out of time. We mentioned it already about to keep up that amazing record of winning a tournament every year for as long as all of us can remember. And he's not looking like he's about to change that anytime soon. But at the same time, none of us would be that surprised if he did. So, yeah, obviously everyone wishes him well on that front in terms of feeling homesick, I guess. It seems strange to say after so long being in the UK. But, yeah, don't wish that on anyone. So hopefully he can find his form on the table, and hopefully a little trip back to Australia will perk him up for next year. But yeah, it's going to be sad if that record ends. Or he doesn't. It's obviously going to end at some point. But you know, it's an amazing achievement. 2006, I think, is it? Or is it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think it's 06. Yeah, it's stunning, isn't it? Really, it's sort of ridiculous. But is there anything else in particular catch your eyes for those early days? I mean, you know, mentioned those sort of, you know, Judd having those sort of toughish early matches, but there were quite a few stories and you know, mentioned those players already, Wu Yeezer going deep, Aaron Hill going deep. So they obviously had stellar weeks, didn't they? That's really important to say that, you know, breakthrough weeks in many ways. And it's that classic kind of mixture we see time and time again of nice shocks, surprises, unlikely players going deep, but then the sort of main hitters getting far. So in a way, it was kind of textbook.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, those two were great. And it was great to see two of the young rising stars of the game playing in a quarterfinal there between Williams and Aaron Hill, went 5-4. But yeah, early on, there were some pretty big shocks, really. I mean, John Higgins losing 5-1 to Martin O'Donnell. There are not too many actual results that are like mind-blowing, but scorelines can be. I don't think many people would have, even if they thought Martin O'Donnell had a chance of causing upset, we wouldn't have picked 5-1. Mark Selby going out early to Zhu Xi, 5-4. We mentioned Neil Robertson losing to Liam Highfield, and Ding Junhui losing 5-0 to Yuan Zijun was a big shock as well. Yuan made three centuries in that game. So yeah, it did seem that maybe the schedule, maybe just because there's loads of good players, that they were going to, the surprises were there to be sprung in Wuhan when those results were going in. But as we always say, there's so many good players, you always end up with big names at the latter stages, even if a lot of big ones fall early. But yeah, they were definitely some notable results early on.
They certainly were. And you mentioned John having some toughish matches before perhaps those later more comfortable wins. It's funny about Term way of doing it. You'd have thought it might be the other way around, but that takes us into the last 16 stage. And that match you mentioned against Hawkins, a 5-2 win for Judd, breaks of 76, 59 got on down here, 97, 67 and 100 from Judd. Actually, Hawkins made 109 and 84 in the two frames he won. So hell of a standard in that match. Mark Allen beat Jack Lazowski 5-2. It was Tom Ford 5, Xiao Gudong 4, a break of 89 in the decider to win it for Ford. A really good win for Wu Yizhou against Stephen Maguire. And Stephen's been playing all right, actually, with his results this season. Breaks of 108, 53 and 96 from Wu. Two comfortable wins for those old war horses, Ronnie O'Sullivan and Ali Carter. Ronnie beating Wan Sijun 5-1, Ali beating Liam Highfield 5-1. Aaron Hill 5, Hei Guiquang 3. Interesting clash that. We've seen quite a bit of Hei lately, and he's been putting some, you know, good results on the board. Breaks of 60, 64, 53, then a big one, 136 from Hill, putting him into his first ever ranking event quarterfinal. We have expected things for a while. In fact, he was one of my tips for last season, as I recall. He perhaps a tiny bit slower than we might have thought, although, you know, we tend to hold players at all levels to quite high standards. It does take time to find your feet. Had those famous wins, of course, early in his career, particularly one against Ronnie that, you know, was he loved to have it in his CV, but you feel a bit of poison chalice at times, so we would keep referencing it. And to complete that picture from that stage, Liu Haoshan beat Zhang Ander 5-2. Into the quarterfinals. You mentioned that game, easy for Judd. Yeah, Tom Ford didn't really show up. The first frame was actually in the balance, looking at the scores, didn't see it. But after that, it was all Judd. He won 5-0. It was Wu Yizhou 5, Aaron Hill 4. Clash of those players trying to get into their first semis. And, it was 3-1 down and then 4-3 down, actually, Wu Yizhou. So he came back well, won the match with breaks of 67 and 104 in the last two frames to make that first ever ranking semi for him. Liu Haoshan 5, Ronnie O'Sullivan 1. That's a hell of a result, actually, at that stage. And Ali Carter 5, Mark Allen 2. Good from Ali there. 5 half centuries from Carter. Top performance from him. Ronnie will chuck in the odd being thrashed, won't he? I guess there's a lot of matches across most seasons. So, you know, whoever you are, the best of all time, we're going to chuck in a few funny results, including being thrashed. But that was a hell of a result, really. And really exciting one. Did you see any of the Wuggies at Aaron Hill? That was it looked like a proper old scrap.
Yeah, I caught sort of the second half of that, and Aaron had a decent lead, so he would have been disappointed. But it was good. Yeah, he didn't You could tell there were certain nerves from both of them towards the end, but not in the final frame. Wu made that century to finish it off. But yeah, I mean, we've said it before. Even when you have sort of the best week, your best week so far as a pro, you'll only come away disappointed, because great run to the quarterfinals for Aaron. You know, he'd have bitten your hand off for that at the start. But losing in a decider against someone he would have fancied having a good chance to beat, you know, he'll come away disappointed, but hopefully he'll be taking the positives. And yeah, it was a great century from Wu to finish it off. And yeah, obviously the eye-catching result, Ronnie losing 5-1. There were just a lot of close frames, which happens, I think, in Ronnie matches when he's not at his best, but then other players spurn their chances as well. But sometimes when he's not playing great, he, you know, is there to be beaten sometimes, and people just fail to do it. But Lou managed it there. Ronnie wasn't abysmal by any stretch. You know, he made that century in the game, in the frame that he won. But yeah, I mean, it, remarkable result. But it was sort of a lot closer than that result suggests. Strange match, really. But yeah, I mean, Liu Haoshan's quite an unpredictable player, isn't he? You know, he's very capable, a bit like Zhang Ander that we saw last week get to the final in Brentwood. Very, very capable, but loses a lot of early matches. But yeah, funny one, really.
Well, some semi-final Saturdays deliver absolute thrillers, late afternoon finishes, late nights, but this wasn't one of them, frankly. It was two one-sided matches. Ali Carter beating Liu Haoshan 6-2, breaks of 64, 96, 122, 91, and 70 from Carter. Really got his scoring boots on there. And Judd was similarly very impressive. 110, 53, 77, 52, 127, and 63 from him to beat Wu Yizhe 6-1. So in a way, you know, whoever you are, you can't do much when you're sitting in your seat and the other guys, you know, compiling breaks like that. And then into the final then, which we mentioned in some detail earlier, Judd Trump beating Ali Carter 10-7. So it's a terrific winner, very good runner-up, couple of good runs from players that haven't been that far before in ranking events. So good all round, really. And as you've already suggested, players very complimentary about the venue, decent crowds. Few people sort of pointing out that players quite, you know, quite close to the crowd, and you know, that kind of packed in intense feel, which is quite good to see. And you know, every time, I think the overall big picture is it's just giving us that little bit more confidence, isn't it? That you know, we now have a permanent return to events in Asia. Not feeling normal again yet by any means. So certainly not for me, I have to say. Maybe, you know, I'm not sure what you'll think out there, but it's not like, oh, we got, you know, we're back for good. And it's still sort of feeling our way back. But I love that we're getting more and more sort of confidence every time that this is now a permanent return. So, yeah, you know, we'll see if this becomes an established event going forward, Phil. But certainly, as I say, like, no complaints, the opposite of that. Lots of compliments from players, really enjoy the tournament. So, you know, China fully back on the agenda. And of course, it'll tie in with the topic we're going to talk with next, with players that have gone, just wanted to go to China for the time when they perhaps might have been advised not to, with hindsight. But it's clearly such an important part of our game. And this autumn has just been brilliant to go back time and time again. And boy, hasn't it shown what we've missed over recent years.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just mixing it up in terms of how the tournaments look, you know, what time of day we're watching them. Yeah, the crowds are great, as I said. I mean, it's a brand new tournament in a city they've not played in before. So we hope that means, you know, that there's huge interest there and will remain there for years to come. As I say, any players I've heard from speaking about it said it was a great city, well looked after. And I said Judd was absolutely buoyant about being in China at the end of the tournament. It's not the biggest of the events there, but it's certainly bigger than, you know, most of the tournaments over here in terms of prize money. 140 grand a winner. Very handy for Judd Trump shooting up to the top of the 1 year list and up to world number three, and sort of very much in the hunt to get back to world number one. You know, there's been that conversation so far this season about Luca and Mark Allen trying to hunt down Ronnie, not been able to yet. But now Judd is very much in that chasing pack. So that's going to be interesting in the tournaments to come. But yeah, China is great to have back on the calendar. And there was all that talk about scheduling and stuff, but Judd has probably done as well for that I was doing the schedules as anyone could have done by just winning back-to-back events and maybe proving that people should just crack on and start and try not to think about it, because, you know, there's wins to be had if you just get on with it.
Well, indeed, a good summing up. And we say, once again, congratulations to Judd Trump and indeed to everyone who put on a fine tournament. That was the Wuhan Open. And we should say, you are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Phil, we must move on to discuss more developments in the story that's dominated snooker discussion over the last couple of weeks. The so-called Macau Five. You know, it's a big story, Phil, when you get a nickname. That gives it some idea, doesn't it, of how this has developed. The five in question: Mark Selby, John Higgins, Luca Bissell, Ali Carter, and Tetchaya Unnu, who signed up to play in the lucrative exhibition event in Macau, China, at the same time as the forthcoming Northern Ireland Open. Well, when we were last on air, Phil, we reflected on the story, as was reported by Hector Nunns, our friend and colleague, that WST had sent strongly worded correspondence to players to tell them in no uncertain terms that if they did play in Macau, they would be breaching contracts, player contracts, harming the game, and facing disciplinary action. There was a suggestion in that story that lawyers representing the players consider those threats to be baseless, as the players had not entered the Northern Ireland Open and were free to do as they please. Well, then we had two statements after that from WST. And the first contained this key section. This from WST then. It is important to stress that WST players do not have to enter all WST events. They have the freedom to choose, which has always been the case. However, with this level of freedom, we do make clear in our player contracts that a player must not do anything that is detrimental to the WST or WST event. It is without doubt that playing the non-sanctioned event instead of playing in a WST event is detrimental to that WST event. Given the exhibition event in Macau directly clashes with the final stages of the Northern Ireland Open, a player's participation in it would constitute a breach of their player contract, given that to compete in Macau, the player would not be available to compete in the Northern Ireland Open, thereby devaluing the Northern Ireland Open. Unfortunately, despite engaging in email correspondence and phone calls, intending to best explain our position and enable the players to make informed decision, five players, four of whom are ranked within the top 16, have decided to not compete in the Northern Ireland Open and have withdrawn their entry in order to play in Macau. The players are Mark Selby, John Higgins, Luca Bissell, Tetchaya Unnu, and Ali Carter, none of whom will therefore appear in Belfast. As a result, if these players decide to participate in the exhibition in Macau, the WST will have no alternative to refer them to the WPBSA Disciplinary Committee for breach of their player contract, and this has been clearly communicated to the players. Everyone would have been spooked by that, no question. Players those involved with organising the tournament. And lo and behold, 3 days later, WST sent out a further statement saying, WST can confirm the Macau event, previously scheduled for October 27 to 29, will now take place on December 22 to 24, with players having received WST permission to enter. As previously stated, due to contractual obligations, the original dates promoted would have been unacceptable and potentially lead to disciplinary action for those players choosing to compete in this event rather than the Northern Ireland Open. As such, we are pleased a mutually agreeable solution has been reached to avoid further action. That's a lot of my voice there, Phil, so I'm conscious I want to pass you shortly, actually. But I think most people are that I know of and are reading and are speaking to are taking that probably mature approach of seeing this from both sides. You know, it's clear to, I think, most of us why players would want the nice bonus, perhaps, of a big payday without that pressure of main tournament play, especially the players in the autumns of their careers, actually, frankly. And I think, you know, without being inside their heads, I can pretty confidently predict that they'll be thinking, you know, what's the big deal if I play 90 or 95% of events on the tour and take 1 or 2 weeks away? Is it really a big, you know, harmful thing? WST, from their point of view, obviously don't want a precedent to be set here. They've acted quickly. They've gone about it in a pretty heavy-handed fashion, I think it's fair to say, and questions will be asked about that. But ultimately, I think you can see both sides. I think most of us can. There's obviously been a truce now, a bit of an uneasy truce, and players will head to China at Christmas instead of October. And, well, those players will be bruised, Phil, from this. I think it's fair to say that they will feel bruised. So it's not an episode that's gladdened the heart in any way, really. But we have an outcome of sorts. As I say, it's not a classic black and white issue. And from my point of view, anyway, it's very possible to see this from both sides.
100%, yeah. I think it'd be odd to not see it from both sides, really. They say mutually agreeable conclusion. I mean, those five, I've not spoken to any of them since that, but I don't know how mutually agreeable it is for them, because they're now not playing in Northern Ireland and can't play in this event this week and have to go back in the 3 days before Christmas to play it. So I imagine those guys aren't thrilled about how this has come about. But you can see why players would prefer to go and play an exhibition for guaranteed a lot of money. I'm pretty sure the fees that they were getting to play that, you'd have to get to at least a semi-final in Belfast to get that money. And you can do it without having to win any matches, you know, you just go and play exhibitions. And with the bonus of it being just ahead of the international championship, so you can stay and prepare and be ready to play that. So obviously it's not hard to see why that is very attractive to the players. But also it's not hard to see why WST don't want that. As much as they may have been able to brush that under the carpet this time, they don't want that to be a regular thing. You know, the likes of Luca and Selby, Higgins, Carter, and, well, Tepcha, I haven't named them all now, going and playing unsanctioned exhibitions instead of playing proper ranking events. And, you know, a prestigious big one that has become a highlight of the calendar as well. It's not like they're missing, with all due respect, the shootout. They're missing the Northern Ireland Open, which is a major event for them to go and knock around an exhibition. So, you know, they don't want that to happen going forward. I suppose the interesting is they certainly have sort of brushed it under the carpet before, because it was only a couple of weeks ago that Ronnie O'Sullivan and Jimmy White were playing an exhibition in Macau during the British Open, when Ronnie had withdrawn for medical reasons from that tournament. So that's a bit of a confusing point, isn't it? Because they've not been quite so reactive in the past in the same situation. But I guess it's just because there's a number of people involved in this situation. But yeah, I've actually been able to look at the players' contract, and I can see why that is confusing on that point as well, because there are a number of clauses about what, when and where you can play exhibitions, and they're very specific in terms of you know, actual sort of distances from tournaments. You can't play in an exhibition within a 50-mile radius of any World Snooker event taking place in the UK, it says at one point. You know, so it is very, very specific. Mm. And the Macau exhibition wouldn't have come under those clauses. So you can see why the players would have thought they're okay to do it. But then there is a sort of catch-all blanket clause which says players can't engage in any activity or conduct that may adversely affect, conflict with, undermine the value of, interfere with, or damage the reputation or value of any World Snooker events. So that sort of, that would cover it, wouldn't it? I think that's what they're saying in their statement, that the Macau event would be doing to Northern Ireland. So, again, taking both sides, as I think it's fair to do in this situation, you can see why the players thought they were free to go and play in Macau, because that tournament wasn't covered in the very specific exhibition things they can't go and play in. But you can also see, well, Snooker have an argument under that clause about damaging the reputation of the Northern Ireland Open by them not playing in it. So, yeah, I guess it's a learning experience for everyone involved, isn't it? That wasn't clear what they could and couldn't do. Now it's been made obvious. And, you know, I think players should be able to go and do whatever they want, really. But at the same time, there is plenty of space on the calendar, especially with the top 16 guys who don't have to go and play in qualifiers, to go and play like they are doing this week in Shanghai. You know, the Northern Ireland Open qualifiers this week, but there's a number of top 16 players playing that exhibition in Shanghai, and, you know, World Snooker backed down over that, and that's fine to do. So I guess just in future, just these exhibitions won't be organised during ranking events. And then, you know, everyone's a winner in that sense then. Players have got plenty of time to do that. We as fans, journalists, etc., get to watch all the best players in ranking events, and everyone should be happy enough with that, hopefully.
Yeah, no, you've summed that up very well, as you so often do, Phil. I mean, players are freelancers. Freelancers is the word we tend to use in journalism. Well, the normal word they'd use is self-contractors, or, you know, they work in a self-contracting way, as you like. But yet they are, to some extent, and perhaps to quite a large extent, that we've seen here, governed by these player contracts. And yes, I suppose WST would have a case of saying it's detrimental. I mean, it already has been, really, because the publicity over the Northern Ireland Open hasn't been great in many ways. It's been about players that aren't playing in it. But, you know, they certainly come across as pretty forceful. And, you know, I think questions can and probably will be asked as to how much, you know, WST, from their point of view, have fronted up. We haven't heard a lot of follow-up from them. Haven't had perhaps a lot of opportunity to speak to them. And I think that's, you know, something that they could definitely look at. And, but again, you know, if they all would say, doubtless, that if we didn't do anything here, who's to stop players doing this again in November, December, January? They'll be emboldened. They'll start, well, if I've got away with, not got away with, but you know what I mean? If this is, you know, I've got around the contract a bit and I can do this, I'll do it again type thing. You know, this is, you know, the opposite of no skin off my nose. This is beneficial, as you say. We've got a tournament coming up. We can practice. It's very, very handsomely paid practice in a way. You know, we use that phrase a lot, don't we, about tournaments in the season, and sometimes in a kind of almost half negative way about the Championship League. You know, that's very small paid practice. This would be hugely significant and wealth inducing, you know, paid practice. So, you know, but my issue is that, I suppose, or one of the issues is that these situations are never quite finished. You know, you think they are, but that those players are going to be feeling sour now. They're going to be feeling bruised, and that's not conducive. And it all adds to this sort of feeling of angst a little bit within the game. Phil, I hope it's okay. I would like to take this opportunity to say that I am going to be shortly writing the first of a new series of columns for Sporting Life, actually, which I'll be doing during this snooker season. And the first of those will be published in the next few days. So I'll be focusing on this story. So I've got a lot more to say in there. You know, keep an eye on my social media in the days to come, or indeed check the Sporting Life snooker page. And I think the all-encompassing thing is it's both-sided, if you like. You can see it from all angles. But I think there has been, you know, a pretty heavy-handed approach to this, actually, and a bit of a sort of sledgehammer approach, which is all right. But then to be quite so forceful and then not sort of be around to explain more or to answer questions about it doesn't leave the most, you know, happy sort of feeling around generally in the game. These players will be probably go as far as saying hurt by this, certainly bruised. And again, you know, that means that, you know, it was like mutually agreeable and, you know, seems like a satisfactory outcome. That, you know, if you delve a little bit deeper into the nuance of this, that's not necessarily the case. So, yeah, as you say, you know, I think you use the line that lessons will be learned. That's clearly the case here. You know, that they'll play at Christmas instead. A lot of snooker at Christmas this year, Phil. Not sure how much we're going to see of it, but I'm certain there'll be some way you can see it on some kind of stream. But yeah, again, a lot of people sort of, I don't know, a lot of people sort of saying, well, why can't they, you know, spread events out more, or players might have a chance to go here and there at different times. But it gets back to that thing. It's easy from the armchair to work out a calendar, and a bit less easy from, you know, for those involved in the nitty gritty of it. So listen, yeah, it's been, you know, as I was saying, troublesome, certainly, a pretty dramatic episode. And you're right, there's not a lot of consistency in some ways, because we've seen a lot of exhibitions. Ronnie's taking place in a lot. My instincts on that tell me that perhaps they've been caught unawares at times. They've been caught on the hop a bit. They haven't always known. As you say, you know, we can probably all go through a list of situations in recent years where players have very much been involved in events during events. So maybe they'll just say, well, this is a number of players, so we have to act here. Perhaps they were given more notice. But yeah, you know, it's a fast moving world and all that, and sometimes we're all caught on the hop. But that there's, as you suggest, there's a kind of consistency question to answer there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure those guys that have sort of lost out essentially this time will be asking those questions. And just a slight vagueness. I'm not sure what sanctions they were facing was made particularly clear either. Those sort of explosive comments from Barry Hearn about whether they should be fined, banned, or thrown out was pretty remarkable stuff from Barry. You know, thrown out. I mean, what did that mean? Just kicked out of the game. Just obviously wasn't going to be a thing. But made for great quotes, obviously. But I don't think the players knew they were sort of threatened with sanctions if they went and played in Macau. But I don't think it was made particularly clear what they would be. Because I spoke to Ryan Day, actually, who was on the poster for the Macau event and then wasn't then wrapped up in the Macau 5, as it were. So it could have been the Macau 6. But he, when he went to withdraw from the event from Northern Ireland, but then it was made clear that sanctions would be levied, if so. And then because he was saying he's on sort of the edge of qualifying, being on the top 16 for the UK and the Masters, and you know, he was aware of ranking points being needed, plus the threat of sanctions, he decided to re-enter Northern Ireland. But he said he wasn't sure what the sanctions were that were going to get levied. It was just general sort of threat. I think the vagueness of it, people not sure what they could or couldn't do. You know, as you say, things happening in the very recent past, which could be seen as the same thing, but hadn't got the same reaction. Well, we don't know they had the same reaction. Now, it certainly hasn't been reported, or no one said that Ronnie O'Sullivan got in trouble for going and playing that exhibition during the British Open. But sometimes, you know, these things happen and no one really knows about them. And then they sort of produce lists of fines at some point during the season that we didn't know had happened. So, yeah, I think a bit more clarity would be very good, as you say. And, you know, Sean Murphy was very, very good on the 147 podcast asking why we don't hear more from, you know, the chairman of the WST, just to clear up a few matters on this, because it would be very helpful, I think, for everyone involved, including the players, because I think there's been genuine confusion on from their part on what they are and aren't allowed to do in these matters.
Yeah, Barry Hearn's supposed to be retired, isn't he? I mean, I'm a fan of Barry, you know, and I think I pretty much always have been. I'm not going to say in spite of myself, but probably the level of my regard is a bit in spite of myself, because his politics would be completely different to mine. I don't tend to go into politics too much and the sort of things he stands for, but I can't help but, you know, be a big fan of Barry. But I have to say, you know, his line about, I think, was that players selling their soul for a few extra quid. I couldn't believe it, Phil. I thought, This is Barry Hearn saying this, isn't it? My goodness. I mean, heavens above. But yeah, I mean, you know, we do need to hear more from the current chairman. No question about it. And, you know, I think I can count the number of media interviews he's given, or certainly significant ones, in the now more than 2 years since he's had that job on the fingers of one hand. And, you know, I know we all cut a bit of slack at first, difficult to follow Barry and all that, but you know, I think that's worn a bit thin now, and I think we need to hear from senior officials generally, you know, involved with WST, because we want to understand more, you know, and I don't think we necessarily understand more by statements like this coming out. It feels a bit, cold, certainly, sort of heavy-handed, and it just feels like a little bit, it's creating a bit of a them and us thing, I think, a bit more than there needs to be. That's the way I'd put it. But anyway, it's I did like Ali Carter, Phil, saying on, I've got it up here on Twitter, my walk-on song is now called Macau 5, not Maroon 5. So players certainly finding a bit of humour in it as well. I suppose you have to in these situations. But as I say, a bit of a sort of, you know, probably murky episode generally. And those players will now play in the tournament, but it'll be just before Christmas, finishing on Christmas Eve, actually, and not as they were hoping for during the forthcoming Northern Ireland Open. But we should say, you know, there hasn't been the best of build-ups in terms of publicity for the Northern Ireland Open, but we'll talk in a couple of moments' time in maybe more positive terms, because there are some top players still involved in the event, and it no doubt will be, you know, brilliant tournament, as it always is in Belfast, one of the highlights of the calendar. And you are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf. And Phil, we should move on then, shouldn't we, to the Northern Ireland Open. As I say, one of the highlights, really, I think, in terms of the home nations events, it's one of those that's really, you know, stolen a march, I would say, on, well, certainly the English and the Scottish, in my opinion. And, you know, Scotland being held in Wales and England didn't help. English Open in a succession of probably ordinary venues, whereas Belfast, it's stuck in the one place, the Waterfront Hall. It's a top location, top city, top venue. That really helps. And it's just made this, perhaps the world still stands top because of its history going back to 1992. But as I say, this will be certainly second for me now. It just really feels like it's got, I'm going to say it, Phil, it's got that bit of gravitas.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think everyone looks forward to this one. All the players very much look forward to going to Belfast and playing. It's a great arena, great city, obviously. Yeah, I mean, Ryan Day said that as well, because I said, we disappointed to sort of miss out on the exhibition, but he said disappointment certainly wasn't the word because Belfast is one of the highlights of the season. And yeah, it's just created great stories. You know, Mark Allen coming to prominence in his home event has been great. But before that, I mean, those hat-trick of Judd versus Ronnie finals is pretty good, isn't it? Mark King winning there was quite a story. And we'd expect another great week there coming up, starting on Saturday, which is unusual for a tournament, but We're treated to one of those great days at the start of the Home Nations where you get all the top players all at once. So, yeah, it's going to be another one to look forward to.
Yeah, roll up, Phil. And, you know, what a start we got on Sunday. I think I saw £15 for one of the sessions and £25 for the day. So, you know, in an age where money's tight and a lot of tickets in sport are still pretty expensive, and it's almost expensive in this sport, actually, particularly for those bigger events, particularly for the Crucible. But this is really good value, actually, you know, and, you know, I think we would generally be all-round sports fans, wouldn't we, and know a lot about what it's like to go and watch a lot of sport, great value. And look at the lineup starting at 10 a.m. Sunday morning. We've got Neil Robertson against Wu Yizhe. I mean, Neil with his struggles we've been talking about lately. Wu with a fine run just gone in Wuhan. So interesting matchup there for sure. Robert Milkins against Cao Yipeng, another one to look out for. And Ryan Day against Ma Hei Long. On to Sunday afternoon, Judd Trump against Jensen Kendrick. Surely Judd can't do it again, Phil. Surely. Don't call me Shirley. And then Kyron Wilson against Sam Craigie, with Ricky Walden also in action against Ben Wollaston. Followed by Mark Williams, another one of snooker's great superstars. He's playing Tian Peng Fei. I know it's on their head-to-heads. Mark's 5-0 up, so he'll have, you know, all the history on his side on that one. Jack Lazowski's got Rebecca Kenner. And then it's Robbie McGuigan against Mohamed Asif. Into the evening, Mark Allen. Can he do it again? What a story that would be. Winner of the last 2 years after his struggles in Belfast for a number of years. Those scenes of him winning both times will stick long in the memory in those wonderful atmospheres in that arena. He's got Ben Mertens first up. Sean Murphy's playing Ryan Thomason. David Gilbert's got Joel Connolly. And then after that, into Sunday night later, it's Ronnie O'Sullivan against Ahmed Ali Essayed. Anthony McGill against Jimmy White. First meeting in 2011, I was looking, Phil, at a PTC event. So they've been playing each other for quite some time now. And then Gary Wilson against Louis Heathcote, which is a nice, interesting match, actually. So lots to look forward to. Big names. And trying to work out how much 15 quid is in terms of shillings. Shouldn't know on the top of my head. That's how I, you know, that's the currency I still think of in many ways in my head. But it's not bad value, is it, Phil? Because he's chuckling away there at my nonsense. But it's good. It's good, isn't it? You want to pay up 15 quid, you know, for a session to see these stars. You know, you can't complain. That's decent value.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that evening session alone on the Sunday, you've got the home. Mark Allen, Ben Mertens is a great first round. So, I mean, that's a tricky draw for the defending champ. So that I'm sure will get the attention of the three tables there. But then any of those three that are following the sort of not before 8 o'clock ones, you know, Ronnie, obviously, and McGill against White and Gary Wilson against Louis Heathcote. Lovely stuff. So, that Sunday, it starts on the Sunday because there's only three tables. I think that's why. And there's usually four at the home nations. But yeah, anyone who's going to enjoy a few pints of harp, maybe, and then going to that evening session, there'll be a great atmosphere for Mark Allen and everyone else on there, Ronnie Sullivan included. So yeah, plenty to look forward to. And a few interesting draws. The other, another couple on the Monday in the first round, Hawkins against Slessor's a nice first rounder. Hussein Fai against Mark Joyce as well. So, yeah, no, plenty to look forward to.
Very much so. We should say qualifying is taking place this week, and we had some results already coming through. And I've got my old friend snooker.org up here on my phone, redoubtable service, and looking at some early results. Was a comfortable win for Hamad Mia, beat Rian Evans 4-0. Dominic Dale saw off Alan Taylor 4-1. Alfie Burden had a win, beating Mustafa Dorgan 4-3. Exciting match, Lucas Kleckers against Andrew Padgett. Kleckers winning it 4-3. And Zach Surtee, I know a player we often keep an eye out for, beating Joe O'Connor 4-2. And, good win for Dylan Emery, beating Martin Gould 4-3. Full list of results on snooker.org. Obviously, those qualifiers will continue. And... Well, they're in Sheffield, aren't they? I think I'm right in saying. And again, I have to say, two or three people that we know well that are fans and indeed officials that are around that place this week so far, it just seems like absolutely nobody's there, which is, you know, it seems a shame that there are so few people. I mean, it just feels like, could we do a little bit more publicity, perhaps, or get a few more people through the doors? Because it's literally a handful. And you know, it's a shame because maybe there's that disconnect thing, you know, that's in Sheffield for an event coming up elsewhere type thing. But yeah, it's just literally one man and his dog, Phil.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's a shame because you can go. It's very much open to the public. But I don't think anyone knows, you know, you even sort of quite intense snooker fans. He would find you. It's a struggle to find out whether you can go or not. You know, I'm just on looking on the WST website now, and there's no real obvious mention of it. There's nowhere to buy tickets. You can just buy them when you get there. But it's a shame because, you know, there's some great matches to go and watch, you know, outside of the top 16. Some really good players to go and see. It's in a bang in the middle of Sheffield. I think it's 10 quid for the day. You know, if you want to take your swimming shorts, then you can go for a quick dip in between sessions if you want. But it's just a shame because, you know, you see, when you see, you put it on Discovery Plus and there's literally a couple of people there, and you wonder if it is even open to the public because it could just be players' guests. That's how few people there are sat there watching. A bit more publicity would be good because I'm not sure how many people you can fit in there, but there are a fair number of chairs. If it was even half full, then it would have at least a bit of atmosphere. And that's what the players want. You know, these lower ranked players, bleak's a bit strong maybe, but, you know, just going playing in front of no one or hardly anyone at leisure centres, you know, they don't love it really. And it'd be nice if they had a bit of a crowd in. It would be nice if a bit better publicised and people could go along. I guess it's just the odd tweet here and there, but I suppose the people that would go, you know, you're looking at sort of older people, retired people who'd go along at 10 o'clock on a weekday, but how are they going to see, you know, they're probably not following Will Snooker closely on Twitter. I don't know what the answer is publicity wise, but it'd be good if there was a bit more because there's definitely a chance for them to have a bit of atmosphere like the World Championship qualifiers. You know, Northern Ireland Open qualifiers are never going to be as good as the World Championship, but they're great. They're full, bit of atmosphere, lots of great snooker to watch. So if we could boost the other tournaments to be a bit more like that, it'd be very good.
It's quite daunting, that swimming pool, isn't it? I don't know how much of a swimmer you are. I'm a casual swimmer. I like going to see, it's one of my sort of hobbies really, to go and see swimming pools in different towns and just see what they're like. Bit of an odd hobby, but I've got a few odd hobbies, Phil. But I find that very daunting, that old Fonz Porge. It's huge, isn't it? And it's sort of like, you know, that's what that big pool is. But yeah, no, you know, it's a good venue, you know, for lots of different reasons. But yeah, it doesn't seem to sort of attract the publicity that, you know, you perhaps want. I mean, it's low key. You're not going to get, you know, every ticket snapped up and people queuing around the block. Of course you're not. But it feels like as a balance, and to get like, I don't know, it's like, it feels like there's a couple of dozen people in there most of the time, but a dozen even maybe, you know, it's just like, yeah, it just seems, you know, quite small fry really. But those qualifiers will continue, and then Belfast, Northern Ireland Open this weekend. We really look forward to that. Phil, we're going to shoot off soon. Any other business? We'll say a new sponsor for the UK Championship, Mr. Q, an online casino. Not particularly dignified sponsor, if we're honest. And I was thinking, you know, come that first weekend of December, I was having a look and trying to remind myself, the biggest deal in sport in the UK will be the Premier League, which is pretty much always the case, frankly, certainly in this country. Unless there's some, I mean, the Rugby World Cup's massive at the moment, so that, for example, will probably take precedence over the Premier League, especially with England still in the tournament. But generally speaking, the, you know, Premier League will be the biggest deal in that first weekend of December. But I reckon next is the UK Championship. It's got a lot of prestige, with a lot of eyeballs, frankly. BBC probably get a couple of million, maybe a bit more even than that, watching on television. It'd be all on the BBC website, it'd be on the radio. You know, it'll be a big deal. I just think, I know times are tough, but you just wonder, we've had better sponsors than that recently, certainly for this tournament, and it just doesn't feel like maybe as high profile as it could be. But listen, of course, we're grateful for any money that comes into the game. And it's, you know, it's important to get a sponsor in. But I just think, I don't know, the UK is massive, isn't it? And it just, it's so big, high profile. You'd have thought maybe some sort of more well-known companies would love to be attached with it, wouldn't they?
Well, so obviously not. Yeah. You would think so. I completely agree with what you're saying. But, I'm sure they're trying for bigger companies. I mean, this is a big company, but, yeah, it's not a particularly well-known one, but maybe that's why they're sponsoring things, to be more well-known. But it's just, there are, you do get some sort of notable own goals with things like this. And you know, when you Google Mr. Q and go on the news section of Google, and the first story, the line, top line being, the GB Gambling Commission agreed a £690,947 regulatory settlement with Mr. Q operator Lindar Media for anti-money laundering and social responsibility breaches. It's not the best publicity. It's a fine for something they've done. I'm not going to get into the weeds of that. But you know, announcing a shiny new sponsor and that being a very obvious thing to find as soon as you look on the internet about them isn't great. We do want sponsors. We do want money coming into the game. And they've promised a lot of sort of fan interaction stuff, which is their thing that they do, apparently. So we'll see what that's like in York, because obviously it was a big improvement last year with the Q Zone and stuff. I think I got a lot of praise. So if that stepped up again, then great. But yeah, I agree. We'd love to see, what do they call, like, sort of blue chipper companies and stuff, rather than, online casinos we've not heard of before. But yeah, we don't want to turn up our nose to money coming into the game, though, at the same time. So it is a tricky one. And it must be very difficult to find these things. But yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, you pretty much put the case there. To be positive, I guess the fan interaction, element could be great. I mean, we really, really enjoyed York. They put some money into it last year, and they reaped the benefits. That Q Zone and going into the practice area and seeing the players in there, that funny glass. I think I call it the Juliet Bravo window, didn't I, or something like that. Looking through, one for the teenagers there, Phil. Looking through to the Eurosport team, and that was great. So all those things are important. And of course, yeah, money into the game is important, and we have to welcome, to some extent, anyone that comes in. But it's a while since we've had a blue chip company, as you called it, for any event, frankly. But then we had a much bigger company in Cazoo that was making a big splash across sport, sponsoring big horse races, the biggest horse races, sponsoring Premier League football clubs. And look how that's, not ended, but look how that's developed with Cazoo and all kinds of, having financial issues. So that's not been great either. It's a troubling time, definitely, for a number of markets due to the economy. And we do appreciate that. But well, we'll wait and see how that sponsorship business develops. In time, we will need to be more of a, I'm not saying it's not already underway, but if it is, it needs to be even more concerted effort to get away from the sort of gambling world, really, because at one time, there will be a time when snooker doesn't have a choice over that. Phil, we're going to shoot off. We have to say, do download our episodes if you can. We're only 3 years in, Phil. never a bad time to say it for the first time. I mean, downloads are the easiest way to gauge how we're doing, and it does help with our rankings, our chart positions and things like that. And I'm conscious I listen to an awful lot of podcasts, particularly American ones now with the NFL season in full swing. And they're forever saying, download, download. So I thought I must try and, take the message from that for our own podcast here. Also subscribe as well, of course, if you can. But yeah, downloads we really would appreciate. So thank you for that. We're off next week. You can blame me, Phil, I'm away. But we're back after the Northern Ireland Open. And we're looking forward to the tournament so much, aren't we? And when we talk about it, we can make no predictions about who's going to be winning or losing. But I can guarantee it's going to be a week of great atmospheres, great drama, and brilliant finals. That's the other thing we're seeing in this tournament. You look through it and just the list. Location, I think, is the biggest reason why this has done so well, this tournament. But also, boy, does it throw up some dramatic climaxes. I mean, the Mark Allen stories in the last couple of years we talked about on here, it's been a great pleasure to do so, isn't it? They've just been brilliant. So for storylines, for drama, for venue, this is a proper stellar event, and we just relish it, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a great story that Allen's going for the hat-trick of Northern Ireland titles and Judd's going for his hat-trick of ranking titles, and they're in opposite sides of the draw. So imagine if we get an Allen-Trump final with that on the line. That's dreamy stuff. A lot of work to be done before that happens. But, some great potential for narrative and storylines as there is with any tournament, but that would be a nice one for sure. And yeah, I think with the just last thing on the Macau stuff, you know, there was headlines of sort of crisis in sport, and I did think even at the time it was sort of overblown. And then when the draw came out for Northern Ireland and those five were missing, but you see all the players that are there, you know, it did make it seem that it's not a massive deal as long as it's not going to continue loads in the future. But there are so many big names, top stars, brilliant players that, you know, it's not the end of the world if a few wanted to go and do something else for a week. And this tournament's going to be a great addition, as it always is, even without those cracking few players there. But yeah, very much looking forward to it, as always.
Yeah, and nice way to finish. It's not dissimilar to golf, actually. When I sort of watch and kind of cover that sport, there's a lot of big names everywhere. But we undersell that a little bit, I think. We mentioned it on here a fair bit, but we undersell quite how many star names and attractions we have in this sport. I mean, think about another high-profile sport, tennis. Now, a lot of legends in that sport are either retiring or soon to retire. And yeah, there are some interesting guys coming through. Of course, there was Alcaraz for one, winning Wimbledon. You know, of course, there's always going to be. And that's important in sport to regenerate. But they're struggling a bit for names. You look at some of those latter stages of slams now, you think, oh, you know, okay. I know we're biased in snooker here, but I think even those who don't follow the sport a lot, they might follow the big tournaments. They've got a number of attractions to think about. Big name players. We're so lucky like that. There's 15, 20. Proper bona fide big names in this sport, and that's something that, you know, we shouldn't take lightly. Have a great rest of the week, Phil. I look forward to joining you off Northern Ireland. And just to say, keep your thoughts coming. We have had some views on the Macau Five, and we'll turn to those next time. We do appreciate that. And again, you've been very balanced on that. So views from both sides, and most people seeing both sides. But keep those thoughts coming. Talking Snooker at yahoo.com or tweet us at Talking Snooker. And we'll also do those shots, Phil, at some stage that people can't get out of their heads. We'll probably do it next Michaelmas.
Yeah, it's a good job they can't keep it out of their head, because we've kept them going for a while on that. So keep that in your head for a little while, but we'll get to it at some point.
Great to see you, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy Belfast.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Nice to speak to you, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for your company. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time here on Talking Snooker from Phil and myself. Cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.